Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the world's most fantastic podcast. That's right. It's Uncanny Treks, covers the Jonathan Hickman run. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. We are here tonight to wrap up the John Hickman FF run. We are wrapping it up. It's over. We've covered 10 volumes, although we're calling this Fantastic Four by John Hickman, Volume 7. We're covering FF, or Future Foundation, issues 17 through 23. Matt, how in the world are you doing tonight?
Doing okay, Bob. Man, took us a while to get to this one. Primarily
yeah,
my
sorry
fault.
About that, folks.
Yeah, it's primarily my fault. But listen, this is very much a book that is a companion piece to the regular Fantastic Four. What's going on there? You really
yeah,
feel
the
it
first,
this one.
The first two volumes were a replacement for the main FF book, and then volumes 3 and volumes 4 fill in the gaps more from the Future Foundation kids' perspectives of what's happening in the main FF book for the volume 5 and volume 6 of that.
So if I had to go back and reread these, I probably would read Fantastic Four, then read Future Foundation, then read Fantastic Four, then read Future Foundation.
That's the way that is usually put up on the list, is read it yeah. month to month. But I don't know, do you think this was the right way to go for coverage, or should we have tried to do more jumping back and forth?
For coverage, I think it's great, because if anyone wants to jump into this, they're going to want to buy it in the volumes. They're not going to buy the individual issues. So, I mean, that makes sense. But if I were collecting,
are covering volumes that are out of print, right? The new version is there's 3 or 4 big trades that collect the whole thing.
An omnibus type thing.
Yeah, there are omnibuses, but they're just how Marvel will put out. They usually call them the complete collection, and so for the complete collections of this, I'm not exactly sure how they do it. Do they keep the FF and the Fantastic Four issues blocked off, or do they run them more interchangeably? We went from 10 volumes, or really 11 if you count the early miniseries that we skipped. So you went from 11 volumes of 4 to 6 issues to 3 or 4 volumes that are presumably about 15 issues apiece.
That's crazy. Yeah, I can't believe we've read this much Fantastic Four. It's insane. All right, let's dive into this,
Bob. We're not done.
let's dive into this, Bob.
I would just say for the listeners, we're not done. We're doing just Matt Fraction's Future Foundation run next, which is only 2 volumes, 8 issues apiece. We're skipping his Fantastic Four, which is fun but inessential. And then we're going to do a final Future Foundation miniseries from Jeremy Whitley that came out a couple years ago. So since we're on the Future Foundation kick, we might as well finish it. But yeah, like Matt says, let's dive into issue number 17, Roommate Experiment. We've got Nick Dragata back on art. We've mentioned Dragata before. He goes on to collaborate on East of West with Hickman. Matt, what goes down in the plot of Roommate Experiment?
So really, it's just Spider-Man doesn't like Johnny Storm rooming with him.
The context for this issue is that it's fitting into what Spider-Man's up to in Dan Slott's Spider-Man run, like before Superior Spider-Man and before Otto Octavius takes over Peter Parker's body. But I've only read the Superior Spider-Man stuff. I haven't read the stuff before it, which I think was called the Big Time Run. Have you ever read any of that?
I haven't, no. I've primarily just read this. I read the Superior Spider-Man, but not anything before it.
Matt, am I right in saying that this issue is saying that Johnny hooked up with Mary Jane?
I mean, is that who that's supposed to be? Is that supposed to be Mary Jane?
I think so. I mean, it certainly looks like her, but maybe
like her.
That's the point, is just that it looks like her.
It's got the outfit. He jokes about it later.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't know what's
but
going
on. But I don't know if the joke was just supposed to be it was a redhead who looked like Mary Jane, or if it's Mary Jane. I don't really know what the Spider-Man Mary Jane relationship is at this point, but I think it's the marriage has been dissolved, and so they're just friends.
Oh, okay.
And so I think it's okay if Mary Jane hooks up with Peter's friends, but I don't know. So yeah, it was funny, but also a little weird.
Really, all this comic is, Bob, is Peter having to put up with Johnny's antics. That's really all it is. Until you get to the end.
Peter getting to be the straight man for the whole issue, which is funny because normally he's not the straight man in his own comic. Until we get to the horrifying reveal, Matt. Matt, is your greatest nightmare to have a Nihilus in a gimp suit taking a dump in your bathroom?
Yeah, it's pretty disturbing. But on top of all that, where was he before? Was he just chained
up? He was around.
But he's chained to something. So where's he chained up at to begin with?
Matt, you've had roommates who've had pets before.
Yeah, but how did Peter not notice? Did Peter never use the bathroom? Where is he chained up at?
Presumably, Presumably Peter noticed.
He just went about his business.
Oh, that's Annihilus.
So the final straw is that Annihilus has to take a dump, and that's the problem. If Annihilus didn't have to use the bathroom, it'd be fine.
Or maybe if in the negative zone they believed in locking doors, man. Yeah.
What if Johnny just gets into the negative zone closet?
I mean, that's entirely possible. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe the joke is that Annihilus stays in the negative zone closet, but this is his way of taking revenge on Johnny for putting him in a gimp suit.
By coming to Earth, using the toilet, not the floor.
Yeah, he sneaks out, yeah, yeah.
To actually use the bat, to use the toilet, and not to do something. He would just go on the floor to tick Johnny off. He would just...
Presumably, it's bad enough that it's punishment enough to have it happen in the apartment at all. I think that's the world we're living with here.
I do want to point out, Bob, that in 2013, Annihilus does have an iPhone. So he's got one up on you.
I don't
ten
know.
Year, how, ten, how, 10 years ago, Annihilus, how, the character chained to the Matt, toilet in Johnny Storm's apartment, can get his hands on an iPhone.
Matt, let me just ask, how's Annihilus's data usage bill going? How's his mental health doing? How's his attention span? When's the last time Annihilus finished reading a book?
I don't know, Bob.
These are important questions before you say that the insect in a gimp suit is beating me, Matt. You need to know the answers to these questions.
Maybe that's why Peter was actually upset, because it was Annihilus. It was Peter's iPhone he's using.
While
on the toilet.
Maybe Annihilus is matching with Mary Jane on Tinder. He's also going to hook up with Mary Jane.
Oh, jeez.
All right. So to keep moving, issue number 18 is opposite of a field trip. Matt, what goes down in the plot of issue number 18?
After giving an embarrassingly human-centric and clone-exclusive take on love and reproduction, Johnny takes the FF kids on a negative zone field trip while future Franklin has a heart-to-heart with Black Bolt.
So, Matt, I guess I should say that I need to respect both you and Johnny's refusal to distinguish among the Atlantean and the Moloid students.
Yeah, it was a different time, Bob.
Yeah, it actually was a very different time in 2013. I will say you can see the times start to change, because I think the way Fraction and Whitley handle the Atlantean and the Moloid kids is very different. So you can see the times start to change in the Future Foundation comic.
Yeah. So, Bob, did the transition from the FF loading onto the bug and the scene with Black Bolt seem disjointed to you?
I don't remember it, but it wouldn't surprise me. I have noticed that there are some pretty abrupt transitions in this run, and I think that's mostly a product of, and I think that's true in Hickman's X-Men and Avengers runs too. If he has these massive stories, dozens of characters, and so he's just jumping around pretty aggressively in order to hit the points he wants to hit.
And of course, part of the problem too, I think, is that I get some of these characters mixed up. Is that Power Kid number 7 on the team? I think he is.
Oh, man, I don't remember.
Bob, come on. You haven't memorized what child has which number on their chest? You're not going to be allowed to take them on a field trip ever. If you can't.
I'm kidding. Well, that's because I don't teach you. I don't teach elementary school. You know what you mean?
I need the Powers Kid to go away.
Well, you'll get your wish in the Fraction run.
Thank God. I need him to go away. He confuses me to the end.
He does have a mullet. 7 is Alex Power.
Yeah, that's Alex Power. Looks a lot like Franklin when you turn the page to see the 5.
Yeah, although I think the difference is just height, mainly. Yeah. So we do have the trope in this issue of characters not being afraid of Black Bolt's voice, which you see sometimes. But we do have to say that Future Franklin has a very different approach to this than the Hulk does in World War Hulk.
So what does the Hulk do? I haven't read that.
I've actually never read the whole of World War Hulk, but it's a famous page where the Hulk basically says to Black Bolt, "I want to hear you scream."
Oh, and then it just doesn't affect him?
Yeah, because he's so angry. It's because World War Hulk is the Hulk getting his revenge on the Illuminati from banishing him from Earth.
Yeah.
And so he's so powered by his rage, that Black Bolt's voice doesn't affect him. And then, do you want to describe to the listeners, in case they forgot, what Franklin's approach is?
Franklin just puts them both in a magic box.
Yeah.
They can talk to each other. We can talk in here. Okay.
You'll be happy to know that in 2 days ago's episode of Star Trek Discovery, they have something similar.
Oh, wow.
They call it the Infinity Room. It's as lame as it sounds.
Yeah, that's about what this was. It's not.
This, if anything, was a little better because at least Franklin has god power, so it makes sense. I will say also in this issue, the Moloids being generally offended by Johnny's pedagogy was great, especially Johnny framing it as an intro level class. And I really do love the Moloids' enthusiasm for one bug, one vote, which Bentley, of course, has utter disdain for.
This culminates in the people of the negatives, the people of the negatives on wanting a new leader, and they have to do an election.
Just say that at the end, we've talked about Hickman using text pages for storytelling. So the last big panel that takes up most of the last story page is the vote tally, which is a very funny way to end the story.
So you had a couple of people you could vote for, Bob. You had Johnny Storm, Derp the Worm, Slugos, Antar of Mog, or you could write...
You could write in,
which most people wrote in Annihilus. Spelled it right.
You do get a Hitchhiker's Guide to the End of the Galaxy or whatever that stupid book is called. You get a little reference for that because Johnny's got 42 votes.
Yeah.
Which makes him actually the loser because Derp the Worm, Slugos, Antar, and then of course Annihilus all really lap Johnny in terms of votes.
Nobody wanted Johnny Storm as the ruler of the Negative Zone.
Well, I guess to answer your question, Matt, of who I would vote for, it's going to require a callback to the prior episode. I need to know, is that Annihilus's iPhone or if it's Peter Parker's? if it's Peter Parker's, I'll vote for Annihilus. He was just curious.
Yeah.
But if Annihilus actually has a smartphone, then he's not fit to rule the Negative Zone, is my take.
Well, there you go. All right, Bob. So moving on from this issue, Bob, we move on to issue number 19.
Yeah, so this is a Safari. The art for this issue is by Gabriel Hernandez Walta, a Spanish artist who most famous for working with Tom King on Vision, which is a really great comic that we might cover sometime.
Is that the one with the Vision family he's got?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I read the first couple issues of that.
Yeah, it's only 12 issues. All right, Matt, what goes down in the plot of Safari?
Anome guides the FF kids around Wakanda.
Yeah. My favorite visual from this is you have Dragon Man carrying a thirsty zebra. It's very sweet. He needs to get that zebra some water.
Yeah, this comic made me want to ride zebras. I never really thought about that, but there was a lot of zebra riding.
I don't know what I know this from or if it's true. It's probably not, but apparently zebras are really nasty, mean animals. I think they're more like donkeys than horses.
Yeah, I could see that.
So, Matt, is this issue the only time in the history of the world where poke it with a stick is the bad call because Bentley does it to a recently booby-trapped hyena clan corpse?
Yeah, and it just explodes in their face. I thought there'd be more of a consequence, but it just blows up all the nastiness.
It's more gross than deadly.
And they're just covered in goop.
Val is getting lessons in government and statecraft from the Negative Zone and Wakanda, two places not known for their democracy. Does that concern you?
Yeah, she seems to be exposed to multiple forms of government, Bob. The more forms of government she sees and how they work, maybe she can form a better one.
I want to live in a communist republic led by Val. I believe in Comrade Val.
I'd vote for Val. I'd vote for Val at whatever age she is here, what, 3 or 4 years old?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
So, Bob, at one point, Bentley just kicks a dude in the nuts. That's probably the best part of this issue.
Matt, I appreciate you and Comrade Bentley's dedication to the simple pleasures in life. I respect that.
Yeah. There's also a part where Dragon Man hides in plain sight. That was also hilarious.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty funny. That was pretty funny. So, to keep moving, because so many issues in this trade. Number 20, not that that's a bad thing. We have Deus Ex Inhuman is number 20. Matt, what's the plot for number 20?
So, the Light Brigade returns to the Inhumans after sojourns into the Negative Zone and Earth, and Franklin and Val get mentored by their future selves.
We've talked a fair bit, or at least I've talked a fair bit, about how Hickman likes dualistic structures. And here we have that with the Supreme Intelligence and Black Bolt as the rival kings. Supreme Intelligence is the Emperor of the Kree. Black Bolt is the Midnight King of the Inhumans. I thought that was a neat little structure.
Yeah, it's different. And I will say that this is definitely one of the issues where I wish we had the back and forth piece, because I can't quite remember exactly what was supposed to be going on in the Fantastic Four issue during this one.
Yeah, I don't precisely either, partially because it's been a couple weeks since we've recorded, but I don't know if it would add that much.
Oh, no, it wouldn't. Because the good thing about these two, though, is that they do add that synopsis at the beginning of every issue that gives you an update on what was going on with each character, which I think that's not just a Hickman thing, though. That's just a Marvel thing in general.
Yeah, that's a pretty standard 21st century Marvel thing, I believe. I think once they went to the heavily decompressed stories in the early 2000s, that became more the standard.
And do most comics too will put the list of characters at the beginning with their pictures so you know who they are. Yeah.
And never has that been more essential than for Hickman's Future Foundation.
Oh yeah.
So we do have in this comic that Future Franklin, he's Hickman's double in an interesting way. So he's cleaning up a lot of the messy plot elements from the prior run and putting things in place for Hickman's Avengers run. And here he's getting Black Bolt to return, to give up on the war with the Kree and come back to Earth in a more or less inhuman status quo idea. And this is setting up the start of Hickman's Avengers run. Indeed, the reason that Black Bolt does come back is Future Franklin whispers to Black Bolt about what's coming in the Hickman Avengers run.
I'm really like, all this setup for the Avengers run, I'm interested in looking at that at some point.
Yeah, I definitely want us to. It's just, it's going to be a lot more comics than this was. So we've got to mentally fortify ourselves before that comes.
Prepare.
Because there's a lot of spinoffs that I enjoyed at the time that I want to cover too. Nick Spencer and Al Ewing and Sam Humphries all had spinoffs of that comic that I thought were pretty fun.
Yeah.
Matt, I do feel Reed's lecture on the different galactic empires, that might have been more helpful at the start of the run.
I agree. It would have been way more helpful, especially for me, because I'm just like, I don't know what they're talking about half the time.
I do love Val calling her future self a hag.
I love her that she smacks her and tells her to quit trying to research how to conquest the Kree Empire. Give me a break.
Yeah, our concern, or at least my concern, about Val getting into the Wakandan and the negative zone systems sort of pays off in this issue as future Val slaps present Val.
She was literally writing Conquest, a prospectus of how to defeat and subjugate the Kree Empire.
Not just defeat, subjugate, ladies and gentlemen. Matt, you had a question to close us out on this issue.
Future Franklin and present Franklin are both talking to each other, and Future Franklin tells present Franklin that he's got to go to regular school. I'm with present Franklin on that. Public school is not going to teach present day Franklin a thing he doesn't already know.
Yeah, I'm going to strongly disagree with that and say that I want God to have to interact with normal people and be institutionalized by public school. You might be, Bob, he's already socialized with his Future Foundation class. No, they're all like that. They're all gifted kids. Future Franklin just needs to chill with some dumb guys, and it will make him a much better person. You're crazy if you think otherwise. That's my take.
So you had the same opinion, too, of Damian Wayne having to go to high school.
It's good for him.
I think it's so stupid.
It's good for him.
I think it's so dumb. They aren't missing a thing. Do we get issues,
Matt,
where he's
Matt,
in high school?
Socialization with dumb people is very important.
Is that why we have this podcast every Saturday, Bob?
I mean, I do got to pull you down to my level.
That's what it is. That's what it's all about, Bob. So anyway,
what was the other question you had about Damian?
Oh, no, it was actually about Franklin. Do they have FF issues where he is actually in high school? Are we going to get to see some of this?
No.
That's what I thought, because it's not that interesting. And it's not necessary.
The reason you don't have it in the Fraction run is that the FF and Val and Franklin go on a vacation.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's where they're off to.
So it's like their summer vacation.
Then there were no FF comics for several years after the Fraction run because of the movie rights things.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe they just couldn't think of anything interesting to do with Franklin at high school.
Then I don't really remember what they do with Franklin in the early days of the Dan Slott run. And then the current run, which I really don't like, is by the guy who does dinosaur comics, Ryan something. I really don't like that guy. But in the current FF run, Franklin and Val and the other FF kids have been sent to a pocket universe for a year. So, yeah, there hasn't been much opportunity to do. And let me also just distinguish, Matt, there's a difference between what makes for good comics reading and what the sort of socialization I want you to force on a god. I want to be very clear that those are different things. Maybe it's not interesting to read about Franklin in high school. Maybe not. I think that depends on the writer. But again, I'm going to insist that Jesus should have gone to high school, Matt.
Okay, Bob. Jesus should have gone to high school. We've got that down.
All right. Public high school.
Jesus should have gone to public high school.
No one should be homeschooled. No one should go to a Christian school. No one should go to a non-Christian private school. They all turn out weird. They need to go to public school. They need to deal with the world and the society as it is.
So, do you think Jesus went to trade school after high school to get the carpentry skills?
I don't think he had time, Matt. Well, no, or actually, well, no, he's 33 when he gets on the cross, and I think he'd only been doing his ministry for 3 years.
Yeah.
And so it does raise the question of what was Jesus up to in his 20s, which that I believe that film, the Passion of Jesus Christ or whatever from the late 80s, the one that Scorsese directed, not the one that Mel Gibson directed. I believe that somewhat explores that, if I remember correctly. Okay.
Jesus hanging out in his 20s doing stuff.
Yeah, doing a lot of blow, going to a lot of clubs, like you do in your 20s.
All right, Bob, let's move on to the next issue.
All right, number 21 is Ronance, Matt. Is that a great title or a terrible title?
It's a great title, and
whoa,
let me tell you
why. I didn't
why.
Expect you to take that line.
Let me tell you why. Because the cover, why? Bob, oh my gosh. The cover has Ronan the Accuser in an embrace with Crystal. He's holding her. It looks like a romance cover of it. It looks like a novel, like a dime store novel. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? He's got her fully picked up. Yeah, it's sweet. It's sweet. So that's Ronance, issue number 21. Matt, what goes down in the plot of this this romance-covered comic?
So Black Bolt negotiates a surrender to the Supreme Intelligence, but at terrible cost for Crystal and Ronan the Accuser.
And speaking of the romance comic vibe of this, I do love that we have this whole scene of Reed getting horned up for his wife, and then Johnny and Spider-Man come in, cock-blocking them. That was a nice scene. I enjoyed that.
This is one of the very few times you see, at least I have seen in this run, of Sue and Reed being somewhat romantic or loving toward each other. And then, other than the initial first arc where Sue stands outside of his lab waiting for him, that was the only other time you got a sense of they love each other, they care about each other, they really...
I think they always usually play Reed up as highly distracted, right? So it almost never... Yeah, that's not just a Hickman thing. And then an even nicer scene from this issue that I enjoyed is that Spider-Man embarrasses himself yet again in front of the entire Inhuman Royal Court. That was very charming.
Yeah, I just love how Spider-Man can't be himself in other people's comics. There's something to be said about that. Yeah, all right, Bob, yeah. There wasn't much of that issue, honestly. Like, I mean, there was stuff that happened, but
we didn't explicitly say, but yeah, the Supreme Intelligence makes Black Bolt, or not Black Bolt, the Supreme Intelligence makes Ronan the Accuser and Crystal end their marriage, which is sad.
Very sad.
But the status quo must be restored, Matt. The status quo must always be restored.
An end to the Ronance.
An end to the romance. So issue number 22 gives the title for the collection, You're Whatever You Want to Be. We have art on this one by Andre Arejo, who's Portuguese, and he's also the artist of Avengers AI, which is a spinoff comic of the Hickman Avengers that we might read someday. Matt, what goes down in the plot of issue number 22?
So we see the Fantastic Five's adventure on AIM Island from Val and Bentley's perspective, and Bentley confronts his father.
Yeah, I do really love that Val is on the grassy knoll to take out the wizard. It's a great JFK reference. I loved it.
Yeah.
And we do get more cute moloid stuff. In this issue, it's them climbing all over Spider-Man and Ben. Very adorable. Very adorable. And
what else we get, Bob? Know what else we get?
What's that?
Bentley, Bentley kicking a guy in the nuts.
Hey, man, Bentley knows what works. Bentley knows what works.
Two issues. Bentley kicking someone in the balls.
We also have a great line from Tong, one of the Moloids, Ben, whose brawn beats science. That's a very good sobriquet for Ben. I liked it. And then we have a really great Val-Bentley exchange at the end after Bentley kicks his father in the nuts and rejects his evil inheritance, where Val, you are awesome in there. And Bentley thinks, I think I love you. Val says, I'm three. Bentley says, don't ruin this.
What the hell? So Val is 3 years old.
So I've never read the comics where Val is born, but I think she was born in the early 2000s. And so in the comic sliding timescale, it's only been 3 years, and her aging has been accelerated by the cosmic radiation or whatever. But The only runs I've read with Val are the ones that come after this, and then the Mark Waid run before this, which is a good run that we should read at some point.
Okay. Yeah, I just, when I saw it, when she said she was three, I was very confused, because she doesn't act like a three-year-old at all. But she does, I would have put her more at six or seven if I had to give her an age.
Yeah, it's hard to say. All right. So issue number 23 is Run. Matt, what's the plot for Run?
So the Franklins and Leech have all the adventures.
So basically we saw this before, and Matt proposed it as a Saturday morning spinoff of Franklin and Leech going on adventures with a future Franklin. Here they do all the adventures. We do get a nice line where Franklin tells his younger self, intelligence without imagination is pretty useless. Creating is harder than knowing, which is him explaining to his younger self why Val likes him, which I thought was sweet. Then at the end, we have future Franklin getting drunk with his uncles and interrupting young Val and answering his mom's last question, which I all thought really sweet. Three really sweet scenes, three really funny scenes. Obviously, it's more of the future Franklin is like the stand-in for the writer, and it makes a good farewell issue for the run. So what's your favorite dialogue from the whole trade, Matt?
Probably in... Even though the whole tactic was lame, the whole way they concealed the whole speaking piece of Black Bolt was lame.
Better than Star Trek Discovery, man.
I like the dialogue piece where he says, feel free to speak in here, Black Bolt. Nothing can escape this cube, and I would never allow your words to harm me. You can't just... I just want to tell that to anybody. Never allow your words to harm me.
Well, and Matt, he wouldn't have learned that phrasing if he hadn't gone to public school.
Sticks and stones may break my bones, but your words will never hurt me. That's right, Bob.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is a pretty funny pun. There's the literal reality of Black Bolt's voice, and then there's also just the pun about emotional damage. Right. That is somewhat clever. Yeah. For me, I'll go with from number 23, Franklin's narration. Interesting that Franklin gets all the good dialogue this time, but he just says, "Here's the thing about adventure. It's all there really is." I thought that was a nice, especially in a superhero comic. I thought it was a nice line.
That is a good line. All right, Bob, my favorite visual was in issue number 20, and it is Val being smacked by future Val. That is nice. That is hilarious.
It's a great image. It's better than mine, but I really liked in 22, the penultimate issue, the first page splash is Anome dominating the Moloids at ping pong, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah. And Bob, we both actually agree on the favorite issue, Bob.
What is our favorite issue, Matt?
Issue number 19.
Yeah, man, the kids in Wakanda, it's just the best stuff. It's a lot of really funny visual gags, thirsty zebras, good stuff.
It's what I would imagine a kid's Fantastic Four comic being.
That's a good way to put it. And it feels a little more grounded than the running all the adventures in number 23. Right?
Correct, yes. All right, Bob, my favorite character, though, for this particular volume is Bentley, just for all the nut-kicking.
Nice. No, Bentley's great, man. He's one of the best things about this run. I respect that. I'm going to give it to Johnny because the first two issues with Johnny being Peter's roommate and then Johnny losing the negative zone, those were both so funny. He predicted that Johnny didn't go evil, but he does screw up because Johnny always screws up, and so that's great.
So, Bob, my favorite trade of this entire run would probably be Fantastic Four Volume 5, which is the one where we find out that Galactus is actually the Herald of Franklin.
You really like that moment, don't you?
I really do. That really solidified Franklin as a character for me. Oh, yeah, this kid's not going anywhere.
That really is the climax of the whole run, too. Yeah, so yeah. It's a good choice. For me, I'm going to go Future Foundation Volume 1. That's the one where they have all the villains, Dr. Doom and the Wizard, join the Future Foundation in order to defeat the Multiversal Reeds, which, to me, that's where the run really stands out. Nobody had ever thought to do the FF in the way that Hickman was doing. I thought that rocked.
Now, Bob, once again, we're both going to agree that the best character in Hickman's run...
No suspense here. No suspense.
...is obviously Val. Val's awesome. Val had her own series yet?
She's only been around since the early 21st century, if I'm correct. And so she's just been in FF comics, and then there weren't FF comics for a good 3 to 5 years there in the 2010s. So, yeah. We'll have covered much of the Val comics by the time we do our other Future Foundation. Not all, but much. Well, Matt, as we close out, I did actually want us to start keeping a ranking of the comics we cover on this podcast. So, so far, I believe we've only covered that Werewolf by Night special from last year, which was fun. I enjoyed that. I think you enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But I assume you're comfortable ranking the Hickman Fantastic Four run above that Werewolf by Night one shot. I assume that's
me. Yeah, I'm pretty good with that, Bob.
All right.
Yeah. We can do Hickman's FF, and then, yeah.
Yeah. Then Hickman's FF number one, Werewolf by Night number two. So far. We're still going. For next time, listeners, we are going to do three more FF episodes, Future Foundation episodes here at the end, just as a little bonus. And also because if we took a break, we would forget all the FF kids. Matt's already forgotten them, but we would totally forget them. So we're going to go ahead and finish out the Future Foundation stuff. So first up is Future Foundation Volume 1 by Matt Fraction, Fantastic Foe. That's issues number 1 through 8 of FF Volume 2. So if you want to read that, to read along with us, and we'll be back with that in a week or two. This has been Uncanny Trex Does the Jonathan Hickman Fantastic Four Run. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.